The acquittal in what was believed to be the most plausible case against a Baltimore police officer last week in the death of Freddie Gray did not cause the city to erupt in protest and violence, even though TV channel MSNBC couldn't resist rerunning riot pictures from last year over the headline "Happening Now" in its coverage of the verdict. In all of the cases of police violence around the country, shock and anger have given way to a stronger community voice in most cases, tentative trust in some cases, and a more proactive police strategy seeking outreach to the community before, not after, tragedies occur. And we can only hope in some law enforcement cases. But still, as the federal government tries to enforce police reform around the nation, the question remains how to effectively police the police. In 2014, the Department of Justice concluded that police in Newark, New Jersey were, quote, engaging in a pattern or practice of unconstitutional stops, searches, arrests, and use of excessive force by officers which had a disparate impact on minorities, end quote. How does a ruling like that lead to reform? Jelani Cobb, staff writer for The New Yorker, is the reporter and anchor for Frontline's new investigation, Policing the Police, which uses Newark as a case study in how challenging reform can actually be from the department's perspective. Jelani Cobb, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you.
So what did they let you see? What did you get to look at?
So it's interesting because we had kind of extended negotiations in order to get access. And kind of once we got in, we were on patrol with officers. We were talking to people who were in the police infrastructure. We talked with people who are trying to institute reform there, with the people on the DOJ side. And I think we got kind of a top-to-bottom perspective. We also talked to community organizations and neighborhood watch groups. And so I think we got a good cross-section of, you know, the perspectives on policing in Newark.
And your access to the police seemed pretty good. I mean, you were impressed by that.
Eventually. We had some obstacles that we had to kind of navigate in terms of dealing with getting access to the police, yeah.
Well, and indeed, that's part of the story.
Yeah.
Here's a sample of what you were able to observe.
How old are you?
13.
All right, so what you... Keep walking.
That's what we have to deal with in the city of Newark. 13-year-olds. So I go back to police.
You think he was justified to be worried about his brother?
Oh, absolutely. But he sees who we are. We're police. Yeah. Shouldn't be afraid of police.
I could hear you in there. What's going on? You're in a car or you're on the street?
We're in a car, and the police have just pulled over and kind of stopped and frisked a 10-year-old. And the 10-year-old's 13-year-old brother is concerned about him. He's, you know, saying, you know, he's just 10. I think the officer did not seem to recognize how traumatizing that could be for someone. And I think what was disturbing about that interaction was that once we pulled off, you know, of course, there was nothing illicit, you know, that the 10-year-old had in his possession. But once we pulled off, they said, you know, well, people give drugs to, you know, little kids and they want them to hold them because they know that they won't get serious penalties if they're found to have them, have drugs in their possession, which may well happen. You know, this is, you know, Newark police. I'm sure they may have encountered something like that. But there's always the presumption that if someone doesn't have anything illegal on them, they must have ditched it or stashed it, or there's no kind of recognition that what you just did very likely was stop and search a 10-year-old.
And part of the challenge, the toughness of the ways in which law enforcement clings to this idea of we're kind of right no matter what, and there is no presumption of innocence on the street, is seen in this particular confrontation. You asked a question here. We'll listen to the answer, and I think we can get a sense of what you were asking.
He pulled out his weapon to make you comply with whatever he needed you to do at the time for his safety and other officers' safety, even for your own safety.
You could point your weapon at somebody and give them commands to comply. Mm-hmm. Once you feel like the threat's neutralized, like, you know, they're complying with you, then you put your weapon away and, you know, have a normal interaction.
We've had kind of a dueling dialogue here where one part of the conversation is saying people really don't understand how difficult it is for police. And having spent almost a year in Newark, I am sympathetic to that idea that it is a phenomenally difficult job and a phenomenally difficult job to do well. But the other side of it is that I think that it is very often difficult for these officers to imagine what it is like to be on the other side of an interaction with them.
Well, you ask a question that is really the big question here. Are we moving towards something that's going to resolve this, or are we just going around in circles? And here's an example of you really asking the big question in this whole investigation.
Can this be done in a way that still respects people's rights?
Absolutely.
I think that's the question that everybody is wondering about policing.
So we try to go out there and respect everybody's rights.
Exactly.
We're not out here saying, hey, we're going to violate this person's rights. Mm-hmm. That's not what we're here for.
You wind up with situations with people's rights being violated. And that kind of interaction was exactly a kind of microcosm of what we just saw with the Supreme Court, with the Strife case, where Justice Sotomayor wrote that really, really eloquent dissent from the idea that someone could be, you know, searched under illegal circumstances, but then evidence that's found could be still admissible in court. And, you know, what I realized when I was having that conversation with officers about whether or not they could police in a place like Newark without violating people's rights, and just so we say, so we're clear what we're talking about here, we're talking about stops where officers would pull someone's waistband away from their body and look down at their genitals to see if they had a weapon, just kind of randomly walking down the street, and the next thing you know, there's someone looking at your private parts. That level of invasive search. What I realized is that the officers and I were talking past each other. Like, their conception of people's rights was so narrow that unless they had done something completely egregious, they didn't believe anyone's rights had been violated.
In American cultural terms, I mean, is this an issue of, you know, sensitive lefties versus mm-hmm. kind of pragmatic, practical right-wing folks, and, mm-hmm. and that's just the way it's going to be? Or does everybody have to go to some kind of civics class, I mean, mm-hmm. to get on the same page as far as what the Constitution even means?
There actually is a Fourth Amendment, and I think that we should be mindful of it and protective of it. And at the same time, there are real concerns with crime. We talk about that there, homicide and violence in the city, and people are really concerned about that. And there has to be some way to find a middle ground between the two of them. But one of the things about Newark was that, you know, they have leadership there that is really invested in the idea of saying that they can find some different way of approaching these things.
Do you trust that?
Listen to you. So here, I had an exchange with the mayor of the city, Raz Baraka, and he said, if I didn't believe that these things could be better, why would I bother to get out of bed in the morning? I thought that was a really good kind of concise explanation of what I would guess is a realistic optimism, that things can change, but they will probably be very difficult to change, and it'll take a long time.
Well, great, great voice as a narrator and a questioner and a journalist here in this Frontline, which is fabulous piece of documentary. Jelani Cobb, staff writer for The New Yorker. You can watch the Frontline investigation, Policing the Police, airing Tuesday night. Frontline is produced by our partner station, WGBH. Thanks so much, Jelani.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.